Welcome to the Danger Room, a place to prepare for the opponents you are yet to face. We discuss strategy and how to level up your game in Marvel Crisis Protocol. We will have our Xavier Protocol segment, some hot takes discussing something new and shiny, and our main topic of the week. We would like to begin by thanking you, the listener, for giving us your time to listen to our opinions of the game. On the podcast, we have Jacob, Sploosh, and myself, Dizzard.
Well, welcome back to the Danger Room for a new year of 2021, and Happy New Year's to everybody. We're going to be doing things a little bit differently. We are going to start with our Xavier Protocol segment. Jacob, would you like to start the new year off with?
So we've had a couple of new releases in the form of Angela and Enchantress. And there's just a little bit of maths that I dug into around the spender attack. So we're going to focus on Angela today. And she's got a cool spender attack called Heaven's Wrath. It's a 3-cost, 4-dice attack with range 3, which you can add extra dice equal to target side. But the really spicy thing is it has a cool triggered extra ability. If you roll at least 2 crits and 1 wild, then you trigger Cleave. After the attack's resolved, the character can make an additional Heaven's Wrath without paying power cost. So you get an extra attack. And the question is, how often does that come up? Now, clearly it's going to vary because you add dice equal to the character's size to that 4-dice base. So if you're punching Rocket, you're only going to be doing 5-dice attack. But if you're punching MODOK, then you're going to be getting 8-dice. Now, it's not going to trigger against MODOK because he's going to cancel out that wild. But you take the point. So I just ran the numbers to see what are the chances that it comes off. And with 5 dice, you've got a mighty 8% chance of this triggering. So maybe not so great into Rocket. But seeing as you're only throwing like 5 dice anyway, why not throw your Blades of Ikka or your Xiphos Sword of the Stars attacking him into him anyway? If you bump it up to size 2, which is what the majority of the characters in the game are, then it goes up to 12%. Size 3, so 7 dice, you go up to 17%. And if you can get one of those big targets, a Black Dwarf or a Hulk, then you've got a 22% chance of triggering it. But it's still not great. It's kind of comparable in best case scenario to Loki's Mesmerize on his spender attack. That's generally around about a 20% chance of triggering that with his double wild on 6 dice. So it's kind of similar. I think that attack is not going to be one that's used particularly often, but sometimes you're going to hit that cleave and it's going to win you a game. Just not very
so,
often.
So for me personally, I really like pairing Thanos in with Angela. How does it look for 10 dice if you hit the perfect magical world?
Okay, well, I haven't actually mathed out 10 dice. But looking at the pattern, I'm going to guess it's going to be around about 30%. It's going to be somewhere in that region. It's still not great odds, but you're right. That's, you know, you're getting on for best case there. Maybe you could stack some other team tactics cards on top of it to really try and bump it up. But I'm not convinced that's going to be a good use of resources.
So basically, what we're coming down to saying is you're almost just better off using your other attacks that also have amazing abilities.
Well, I would say that I've used that attack, the Heaven's Wrath. Once I hit somewhere in the like 8 to 10 power zone, I feel like it's kind of like, why not? She only really can use like 4 power a turn, like generally, is my finding. So, you know, if she gets 2 on her beginning of her turn, so, and then if she gets like a nice hit, it's kind of like, well, you're not going to use, as long as you have enough to use the Odin's, Angelic Assassin. Because you're going to throw something if you can, right? That's just happening. So then you just need 2 more for Assassin. But it's like, if you got extra, it's like, all right, I guess I'll Heaven's Wrath you. Because most characters are the same amount, like you said. So, you know, you might as well roll some dice and get an extra attack in.
Yeah, she does often have a sort of an excess of power, but there are often good cards that you want to use her with. In A-Force a lot, I've been seeing people using her for like a 5 power med pack onto She-Hulk. That seems really good because a 25 health She-Hulk seems better than a 20 health She-Hulk. So,
I'm definitely on patch up for playing A-Force. that card might have a little bit of resurgence.
Yeah, I think Patchup is definitely going to come back with A4. So that's, I mean, it has for me. So,
all right, next we're going to talk about Enchantress, I guess.
Next week.
Oh. Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
So next, we're going to actually talk about something we haven't talked about in a while. And that's just the fact that we do have a Patreon, and we've gotten quite a few people actually supporting us lately. I don't have the names in front of me, so I apologize for that. But we just want to thank everybody who does support us on the Patreon. And you can find a link to that in the show notes if you are interested. But we will leave that at that.
Okay. So we want to say a great big thank you to GD Nerd, Ghosteer, Gronko, Kevin R. Stewart, Mandalorian Orange, Suzume Kazo, TBE Matt, Sungsu, Dion, Pickle, The Wargaming Dad, and Charles, aka Omnus. Thanks, guys, for supporting the podcast.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
Now, there are, I think, two more who aren't in our Discord. So jump in our Discord, guys, and we'll be able to thank you properly.
And you can hang out in our special room.
All right, and then something else we also want to hit on is thanks to the wonderful people over at Across the Bifrost, being TT and the most amazing Pat, we've become a part of the Across the Bifrost Nexus, and there will be links to that in the show notes as well. And I say go ahead and give that a look, because there's a lot of really good content creators. It's just a really good hub to be able to find information out about the game. It's all sorts of different things, from Jacob's articles to our podcast, across the Bifrost podcast, and YouTube videos. It's just basically a big culmination of different content creators. And this project that TT and Pat put together is being sponsored by Discount Games Incorporated. So Jake, what's the other company that is supporting the Nexus?
So based in the UK is Blackgate Games. And so if you don't have a local game store, or your local game store can't provide what you need, then over the other side of the pond, Discount Games, a great store. And in the UK or in the EU, have a look at Blackgate Games and check them out, see if they've got what you need.
Awesome. So again, we're doing this episode a little bit differently, and we're going to be hitting our hot takes at the end of this episode. So we're going to go ahead and move into the meat and potatoes, as they say, of the episode. And what a better way to start off a new year than Season 4 of the TTS League. And we're going to be talking about some rosters, mostly ours and some other people's rosters that we find interesting throughout this episode. So I'm excited for Season 4. I'm doing something new, because my time zone, and I'll be playing in the East bracket. So it is very possible that Jacob and I will have a game throughout the season.
Let's hope.
So let's go ahead and start with talking with Sploosh. What are you planning to do for Season 4?
I'm going to play X-Men. I kind of mentioned that in my resolution, but I'm going to give it a shot and see what happens. I feel confident that I can do well with them. I do think there's going to be a lot of tough matchups, and there's a lot of like shenanigans going on right now. So there's a little bit of skepticism as to, like, you know, how much can I handle shenanigans, but we'll see. I'm optimistic and excited to play it.
Apart from obviously the X-Men, what's the core of your list? What are the key models you're taking?
Well, I gotta say, I had a conversation about my list, and so I'm playing Proxima Corvus, and then that's kind of a thing. And then I added in, like, I mean, the core of it's gonna be basically no Cyclops, add Taskmaster, and then the Proxima Corvus is a part of the list, and then to kind of round it out. Oh, and of course Corvus is bringing his gem, unless I forget to take it. And that's a thing. The last three models are Mystique, MODOK, and Okoye, which to me, it kind of just looks like I'm bringing a tier list and then some X-Men. You know, not the Valkyrie, but you know, a Mystique sort of kicked her out. And you know, Deception's kind of like the hotness right now, and I really didn't want to be without it. So yeah, when I was talking to some friend about the list, he's like, "Oh, you said you're playing X-Men, but really you're just playing like Corvus MODOK." And I was like, "I guess that's true." You know, I love MODOK a lot. That's not a secret. And yeah, I don't know. It's not much to say. The characters are good, and I think Storm's leadership is good. So why not give that leadership to good characters? X-Men is consistency a little bit, which is always good in a dice game. And then the mobility, it just offers a lot of decision trees and might catch some people off guard, and they might find themselves vulnerable when they didn't think they would be. And so it lets me feel smart when I make good decisions. And, you know, MODOK and Corvus are two characters that don't have a charge and wish they did. And Storm's leadership can help with that. So pretty much is. I will just say that the list is kind of, I found it, everyone knows Corvus is good and Proxima is pretty cool, and the husband-wife is a cool combo, but I've been finding I love keeping priority with these guys. So that's been a happy accident. With all the craziness people are building, like these three-person rosters, it's less good. Still good, but like maybe I don't get all the priority I want. However, if people are bringing all these chunky minis, it's nice to have a nice blade that cuts through butter. So, you know, it'll be interesting. It's going to be real fun to see what kind of matchups I see, and you know, if I can if I brought enough firepower for this current gun show.
What would you say is a an outlier or something like unique or special to what you're bringing?
Well, it's definitely not hired muscle. Yeah, I don't know. I would say I don't think I'm doing anything that other people aren't really doing. I got Disarm and all the fun stuff that everyone else brings. I'd say maybe the tactics I'm bringing, I'm kind of going heavy. 2 out of 3, I've got Deadly Meteors and Mutant Madmen, so I'm going for a little bit of the RNG stuff, which I've publicly said I'm not a huge fan of. I think I've been pretty open with why I'm doing that, but just to kind of recap it, basically, I would say I don't like playing against Criminal Syndicate because they put like a unique clock on teams. And if I can pick something that sort of makes them at least play on an even playing field, I feel a lot better about that. So that's really why that's there. It's not really because I love those objectives. I just have to play with what I got and use the tools that are available in the game.
It's interesting you didn't consider demons for that, because that's one of the things in my roster that I've got thinking about the Criminal Syndicate matchup. I have got one of those pay to interact objectives, but I've also got one. Demons is my other one, which I don't mind playing into the criminals on, because it bunches them up, which they want to try and spread out. And it's not particular. It's one of the slower scoring secures. So I'm trying to limit them that way. Did that cross your mind?
Yeah, it's a thought. I just think that probably Storm would have to stay in the back, and then she'd go from like, you know, two diced physical and just get pounded. They have a lot of like damage mitigation between like Kingpin, Crossbones, and Dwarf that like feel like they can kind of ignore the flames a little bit. They're still pretty chunky. I'm not saying you're wrong. I think that's an interesting take on it to kind of slow the game down.
And also, but, you know, your strategy is kind of deal damage, and the Incinerate helps you do that. So there's a nice synergy there too.
Yeah, I'd rather just them not get their advantage, because I can hold points the same way they can. I just eventually, hopefully, will chew through them better than they can chew through me. You know, that's the idea anyway.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
I also like I got Taskmaster and Beast. I mean, like they're not super offensive pieces, and they're required right now. Like obviously, I'd rather have more X-Men, but I'm relying a little bit on like a Corvus or MODOK to like be doing major chunks of damage, and I need my tanky pieces to be tanky. And I wouldn't want to play Taskmaster while incinerated, you know. That and Storm's already a little squishy, so I don't know. That's just my take. You have a point, but I just don't feel comfortable there.
So to sum yours up, your plan is apply Corvus or MODOK Two-Face.
Well, I there are rosters where I'll play MODOK and Corvus together for sure. And good luck to my opponents, but you know, that's only an option at certain point values, right?
19 so, up, yeah.
I
19 or 20.
I just want to quote you. I'm pretty sure the other day you had said something to me about what kind of monster would play MODOK and Corvus together.
Yeah, that monster's me.
Yeah, now we know.
I've always, ever since, it's actually something I've done with Cabal as well, and I've been happy with it. So with X-Men, it's like, oh, cool, I can keep doing this. All right, I'm in. A big part of it is aim lackey, giving Corvus mobility with aim lackey, and then you've got the Storm flipping around thing. It's good times. So,
all right, yeah. One last question for you would be, which region do you think is going to take the championship this time?
I honestly think everyone has a shot. Like, East is getting stacked. A lot of the power players of Australia are back in their region to help their community, which is great, but they're tough cookies over there. And, you know, there's a few Slayers hiding out in the West, even though it's a small group, and Central's going to be just a crazy time as well. It was last season. I'm sure it will be again. So I couldn't even predict who's going to come out of Central to even predict where it goes from there, you know?
Get off the fence. Pick a region.
So in our poll on our Discord, which people could join our Discord and see that, I voted for Central because obviously I'm going to win Central and then, you know, go the whole way. But, you know, I mean, other than me, I don't know.
All right, fair enough. So I guess I'll go next. We'll save Jacob for last because he's, you know, got his crazy stuff. I am bringing X-Men and A-Force because I love X-Men, but my X-Men's really lacking because I only have Storm and Beast in there for X-Men and Taskmaster to kind of help fill it out. But overall, my list is Storm, Taskmaster, Beast, Mystique, Angela, She-Hulk, Shuri, Okoye, and then Thanos and a Mind Gem. That's kind of what I'm going for, is just the A-Force and X-Men. And I kind of come to the realization of, like, I really like the card First Class, but when you pop First Class, you're really only going to get the benefit of it with, like, one to two characters, and at most three, but your biggest benefit is going to be with two characters. So I'm completely fine with just taking Storm and Beast and throwing Taskmaster in there. Yeah, I'm really limited to. I'm going to have to run all three of them, but they're not bad characters.
And who do you see coming in to flesh out your X-Men? So when you've got those three as your base, who are your exciting characters you're bringing in?
Angela, without a doubt. Angela, or if I have the points, I might do Thanos, but it's more or less going to be Angela, Okoye, maybe Shuri. But Angela's a big one. I think Angela with Storm is just stupid crazy. Just giving her even more mobility, and like, she doesn't need it, but it just turns her on even more.
I noticed you just sneakily slipped in there. Oh, but tell us about that. So hang on, you're running an X-Men A-Force list, and you've got Thanos and presumably at least one gem in there.
Yeah, so we got Thanos and a Mind Gem. Because, I mean, I guess we'll let the secrets out, but I think Angela, She-Hulk, and Thanos is kind of scary. And the Mind Gem kind of really helps with where Angela and She-Hulk will be kind of sucking, and Thanos really kind of helps that out because he'll have his cosmic portal and the Mind Gem to where I've been calling it selective targeting, to where it's really limiting who can push on Angela or She-Hulk, and limit their engagements, they're not getting overwhelmed. Because I think that's going to be their biggest issue is, yeah, they can put out a lot of damage, but they can also get overwhelmed really easily. So I'm hoping Thanos is going to be able to basically make it almost a wave fight where I'm only dealing with one to two people at a time instead of having four or five against my three people. So that's kind of the thought behind it. And Thanos adding two dice to She-Hulk's seven die base attack. Hello. nine die zero cost attack is just sounds stupid.
What map would you want to play that on the three people?
So I think it comes out to what, 18 points for Thanos with the gem for all three of them. So hammers.
Okay. just more pain.
Yep.
I played it against Jacob. That was like the first time I played it, and I can't remember what we played for scenario though.
Probably on something like Demon or Gamma.
I think it was herbs and Gamma.
Yeah,
that sounds right. Jacob won, but it definitely caused him issues, more issues than I thought it would for how low model count I was playing. Because I don't usually run low model count, so it's something new for me. But it's definitely a fun list, and it's kind of out there as far as like a really weird trio of people to be fighting together.
Right? How are those people friends, right?
Exactly.
That's interesting, and it's kind of like I was saying, I think there's this minor trend to go really low on models. Like, you know, usually people would see four or five as kind of the norm, and I've been hearing kind of winds of people mentioning like three minis or four when you normally would have five, and it's kind of caught my ear, you know. It's like, huh, that's interesting. It's just there's like this weird Thanos resurgence going around.
Well, I think this is something that Jacob wants to hit on maybe later, but just to talk of, I think season four is the season that Thanos is actually making his debut. Because it's crazy. I think we'll talk
whoa,
about
whoa,
this.
Whoa, 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 whoa. I'm not sure we can let that slide. Come on. Morgan was amazing with Thanos and Black Order. Taking them and having it coolly snatched away by some amazing dice on a Okoye. I don't know about... I think you're kind of doing down his achievements with Thanos last season, but sure.
Yeah, making second place. Yeah. Sure.
So I guess maybe not his debut, but maybe his widespread debut. Where like, do you have the percentage of how many people took Thanos overall?
It's 13%. I'm trying to count where that puts him in the overall list. Like, I think he's somewhere in like the 20th choice, 20th highest pick. So it's not super. He's still not that popular, but
he's insanely popular.
Out of like 60 minis, right? That's still pretty good.
Yeah, and yeah, I think Morgan's got to take a lot of credit for bringing it to the wider attention, showing that, you know, I think some people had just really counted Thanos out, and since that, there's been all sorts of people experimenting with Thanos. I'm sure some of them were doing it beforehand and just kind of refined it. I think when you've got so many threat tied up in one model, that you need to be able to play him well in order to get the value that you need to get out of him in order to justify his threat, because he's not a Magneto. Oh, it's clear. It's point and click. Blow up that thing over there. He can do that to an extent, but if you're doing that, he doesn't do it as well as, you know, some other six threats, and he doesn't do it as well as some five threats, frankly.
Yeah, I know drafting Thanos in the $100 draft is on my bucket list because that seems like a good time.
yep I agree.
Yeah, that's basically it for my list. Is I'm just trying to have some fun over here in the East bracket and getting some games in with my two affiliated X-Men and primarily Air Force my A-Force roster. So it'll be a good time. I think I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I guess that leaves me. Yeah. So I went on a bit of a journey deciding what to play. I've been playing a lot of Doctor Strange, Pentagram. I call them the Pentathletes. I've got these three different modes with cubes and Hulk or She-Hulk, and then MODOK jumping through demon, turn one demons or gamma, and Toad scoring the Herb round one. And I played that a lot, but I found it had some kind of troublesome matchups and didn't have all the tools I think it needed to kind of be a rounded list. You know, if you get the wrong run of opponents, then I think it's going to be a real bad time. Having said that, if your opponents aren't prepared for it, then it's a real bad time for your opponent, because it just does things that no other list can do, in terms of just taking the game away from your opponent quite significantly in round one. So I went away from that and I started looking at, I saw, you know, we've got She-Hulk coming out, we've got Magneto, we've got things like the Thanos resurgence. I saw that coming. So I was like, okay, well, maybe I want to go back to more of a fast control style and go back and revisit Wakanda and maybe put them with Asgard. And there's lovely Asgardian models. Enchantress. I love Enchantress in Wakanda. I think she's a strictly better vision for Wakandans in terms of the way that she fits into the team. So I was quite excited by that and, you know, revisiting my old stomping ground. And, you know, we saw Esmond, how well he did with Wakanda winning season 3 with it. So it was on my strong consideration. And I think probably if I sat down and said, what do I think is, if, you know, Space Jam, one game to save the world, I think I would probably bring a Wakanda Asgard roster. I think that's what I consider to be the strongest right now. And I was like, well, why don't I play that? And I started looking at the Hired Muscle stuff, and I played one game with the Asgardian Hired Muscle one, and I just went, this is good, but it's not fun. I just don't want to play this. And that kind of put me off the whole roster, because what I liked about it was, again, it had the same thing as the Pentathletes. It's got really strong plays for a range of extracts and a range of secures. And it's got that kind of, I really liked that coverage feeling that you can go, doesn't matter whether what my opponent gives me. If they give me extracts, great, I've got a brilliant plan. If they give me secures, I've got a brilliant plan. Really doesn't matter. I thought also the plan of saying, well, if I win extracts, I can run Hired Muscle. And they're going to be scared of Hired Muscle, so if they win priority, they're going to choose extracts, and I get secures, and I get to play Wakanda without priority, choosing the secure I want. That sounds really good as well. So I really liked the way that that whole thing meshed together. But like I said, I played one game, and I just went, ugh, I don't want to play this. And so then I went back to my Pentathletes roster, and that's where I ended up. I was looking at swapping out Hulk for She-Hulk, and in the end, I didn't make that swap. I stuck with Hulk, which is, I'm kind of pleased that I came to that conclusion, because it means Hulk does have a home that we haven't, that She-Hulk isn't strictly better. And the reasons that I came to that were She-Hulk's, fundamentally, it's because She-Hulk isn't affiliated in Defenders. If she were, I think I would have changed it. What that enables is it enables me to take Okoye in a lot of the She-Hulk builds that I was looking at. And if She-Hulk is affiliated, you can fit Okoye, and if she's not affiliated, you can't fit Okoye, because you just don't have the space to fit the 11 threat base plus a 6 threat She-Hulk plus a 2 threat Okoye in anything less than 19. And I don't really, and the extract that I'm going to be playing on, I would be relying on my opponent to give me a high threat secure, and basically it's just demons, in order to run the plan that I want to run. So we came back around to Hulk, and Hulk's got some advantages. He hits back a lot harder if they fail to kill him, which is great. So sometimes She-Hulk takes a whole load of damage and has some power, and she's got good uses for her power, but she doesn't hit as hard as a Hulk hits if they fail to kill her. So that kind of, if you fail, I'm just going to wipe out the things that came nearby. That's great about Hulk. And his Gamma Leap as well. He is faster. He's better at getting either where he needs to be or away from trouble because he's got access to Gamma Leap. So I ended up going with Hulk, and I'm feeling pretty pleased about the roster. But as we had an interesting conversation with Sploosh yesterday, where I was saying, I'm taking this roster, but I'm pretty sure it's not going to win. I mean, maybe it will, but it's got some really bad matchups, and I think we're going to dig into those maybe in a future episode. But there are some things which it just really struggles to deal with. And if I get a run of opponents taking those kind of rosters, then I think, you know, it's going to struggle to win those games. Kind of my backup plan is that I have to not run my kind of round one scripted plays and just go, oh, fine, I'll fight you in a, quote, fair fight with my defenders, and I'll have run people like Wolverine and Valkyrie and Hawkeye and try and dice you off the table with some good hex you, do that whole defenders stuff, heal people up with Strange, give them extra defense dice, and go for sort of an attrition style. But I feel like it's lost an edge, and a lot of rosters have got an edge to them at the minute. That they're saying, this is the cool thing that I'm doing. I'm, you know, Sploosh is going to deliver Corvus really effectively, and it's very hard to counterplay around that because of the cool play with Proxima. They've got a cool thing that their roster is geared towards doing, and I'm having to leave my cool thing out in those matchups, and that feels like, I don't know if I'm going to, how I'm going to do in those, but we'll dig into that more in another episode.
All right. Do you want to? I mean, I think you kind of mentioned to me before, off air, if you will, how you were. This is more of like a science experiment for you than like.
Yeah, when I said that to Sploosh,
going in as a champion,
was like, "Huh, that's a weird attitude that you're going in with a roster you don't think is the best roster." And I am a scientist, and I kind of. My null hypothesis here is that Defenders Portals is too good and needs some kind of modification. It might need, you know, restricting or banning or erratering. That's my null hypothesis, and I'm kind of looking to disprove that by not running the board, by not having this go and be like 6-0 and then easy walk into the top 16. That's my aim. It'll be a success if this doesn't do that, in a sense. Because I want to have faith that AMG has tested this, and they're like, do you know what, this is strong, but it's got counterplay, and I've seen a lot of the counterplay, and a lot of it has been released recently. So I think that may have been informed by the fact that Defenders was earlier in the development cycle, and they've given some tools to help combat it. I'm excited to see how this goes. It's a fun roster to play. I enjoy kind of the precision that's required with it. And after you've done your setup, your round one, here's my cool thing I'm doing, there's a lot of reactive play that you need to have. So it's kind of got elements of scripted, I know what I'm doing, I can play round one pretty fast because I know where everything should go and what it all should all be doing. But then I've got to kind of be problem solving and thinking on my feet and looking, okay, well, you've got this counterplay that you're going to do, but if I do this, then I'm going to counter your counter so that you can't do that. And I enjoy that kind of, that puzzle solving mid game.
What's a?
Yeah, I respect it.
What's the one matchup that you don't look forward to seeing?
Currently, the biggest one that's looming for me is Brotherhood. That's the one where none of my game plans work very well, and I have to just kind of go, "Ugh, fine, all right, we'll play a normal game." So, yeah, there's a few which are, you know, this game plan doesn't work, or this game plan doesn't work very well, or they've got good answers to this game plan. But Brotherhood, they've just like, nope, they can get to Hulk to blow up Hulk. They don't have a problem doing that. Magneto is fantastic at dealing with MODOK, and they've got the movement and the range to be able to go and deal with Toad or Valkyrie, whoever's got the herb at that point. So they've got all sorts of answers to the three main questions that I'm asking, and they don't have to distort their roster or their list building at all. It's kind of, well, I'll take all these things I was going to take anyway and put in maybe these one or two extra things just to make it even better. So Brotherhood is the one I'm fearing the most.
I'm actually curious if you have an affiliation where you see and you get kind of excited, like it's a good thing. Anything like that?
I'm kind of happy if I see Asgard across the table.
Ooh. That's bold claims. Considering, I think a lot of people feel they're very good right now, for obvious reasons.
Sure, they don't have great answers to the questions that I'm asking.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Particularly on some of the, like, getting to Hulk. Rainbow Bridge helps, but it's, you have to have three power for Rainbow Bridge, so maybe you're R&Ding to be able to do it round one to get the Hulk, and then you haven't got any power for any of your cool abilities. You can't throw a Koye away, for example, so she's going to bodyguard the hit, and you're not going to build as much power, and you're not going to do damage to Hulk. You're going to struggle in affiliate. Certainly, the standard kit that they're bringing, it's more difficult for them to do stuff around the Toad play as well. Even Enchantress doesn't have; she'd need to like climbing gear or to Rainbow Bridge round one in order to get to the point where she would have enough power to Sirens call someone away, which is what she wants to do. But they're so deep, the setup, the way that plays out. My Valkyrie and my Toad are so deep on that setup that she doesn't have enough power to fuel all. She needs like 5 power in order to fuel all of that. And there's just, she doesn't have it. So Asgard, I think, kind of Asgard is used to, when they get what they want, they're used to going, huh, I'm going to set up the game round one to be largely advantaged to me. And I'm not, I think that I can flip that and I can do that to them. Having said that, I'm sure, like, I've already got my pain for round one, but round two, I'm sure I draw Asgard and lose to them, having said that now.
So then the same question for you, which I forgot to answer, and I'll say my answer real quick. The region that I think will make it to the champion will be, I'm going for Oceania. I think Morgan, I think season four will be Morgan. I think we'll see when we talk about his list as well as to why I think that. But what about you?
Yeah,
what
I agree, Oceania. I think Morgan's a great player. He's got a good roster. But they do a lot of practice. And it's interesting, in the article that I wrote, which we'll touch on in the next section, the people who had the most difference in their structure of the list they were bringing was the Oceania region. And I think I feel they've got some good tech that they've been working on and refining and honing, and that maybe the rest of the world hasn't really seen it yet. Spoilers, it's largely Wakanda.
we're just gonna have to rename them to Wakanda at this point.
I mean, either they're 6 months ahead of everybody or they're 6 months behind everybody. Let's see which it is.
Yeah.
So moving on, we had gotten an email, the email that we are very bad at checking. but I got an email from a certain person that the name is escaping me right now. But he said, hey, man, I'm a huge fan of the podcast. I have the miniatures and almost all the characters, but sometimes struggle to play with people due to COVID shutdowns. And I was wondering how I could play the online simulations with people like you talk about on your podcast. Looking forward to hearing back from you, and thanks for all that you do. I just wanted to say that we will put a link to the Discord for the TTS, for the Tabletop Simulator Discord, in the description for this week. And if it's not there in the past, but what you can do is you can go to Steam and you can purchase Tabletop Simulator, and then you just search in the little workshop for Tabletop Simulator, and you will search for Marvel Crisis Protocol, and it'll pop up with the mod for the game, and then you'll pop it in there and it'll load up.
You can just Google it and hit subscribe. Like, I do that for all kinds of things. There's so many mods in Tabletop Simulator, it's ridiculous. But yeah, if you just Google it, it'll bring you to the... You can type like Steam in whatever game. It'll bring you like probably in the first two links. And you click that, it'll log you into Steam, and then you hit subscribe. And it's there forever. And so when you load up Tabletop Simulator, the game's waiting for you.
And it's a great tool to get games in this this interesting world we live in currently.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually found there was a game today. I was like, wow, the mods actually support their Tabletop Simulator community and game. I haven't seen that yet. Like, the mods were the developers. It's like, whoa, these guys, it's a board game, and they're ahead of their time. I'll just name the game. It's called Sky Tier. But that blew my mind. And I think this is not really a planned thing. I'll keep it short, but like, I think there's definitely a value to the tabletop simulator being supported for a tabletop game. You have to be a little careful, but I don't think it's an accident that a lot of these games have been allowed to continue. Well, I have seen some games from some companies be cease and desist, but other games within the same company are not. And I think it's because there's like this weird boundary between what might be too helpful for people, where a tabletop game like this, where you own minis, you paint minis, you're more inclined to want to keep playing that in person, right? But also at the same time, it gives you maybe some frequency in a community to be a part of, so you're more invested. So that's my two cents on it.
Absolutely.
Anyway, if you want to join our Discord and ask us, we'll always give you the links to any place. I will say that our Discord might not be the best for like consistent training. There are other Discords where like literally like 24 hours a day, there's probably someone around willing to teach you how to use the mod. So you could go in pretty blind and get kind of helped out.
Yeah. So moving on to our hot take segment, Jacob brought up that we wanted to break down and go over some specific rosters that were submitted for the Season 4 League. So, Jacob, go ahead and take it away.
Well, so first, if you haven't already seen it, have a look on xavier-protocols.com. I've just put up the stats from Season 4. And so I just wanted to run through a couple of headlines, one or two things from each section. So looking at the affiliations, Asgard, we've got all the new toys. They've got this hired muscle play that everyone's talking about. Apparently they're really good. 23% of all lists can run Asgard. And that's a good 5% higher than any of the other affiliations. Brotherhood of Mutants in number two, and then Defenders, number three. Criminal Syndicate, and then Wakandra and Web Warriors about the same, number five and six. So what I was slightly surprised at is that there wasn't more A-Force. That comes in just underneath that. But I thought a lot of people would be excited. It's got some really exciting plays that they can do. And it's got some cool characters as well. You know, you get to play with like just a laundry list of the best characters in the game, all in affiliation. It's fantastic. So I was surprised not to see that higher.
I'm going to blame holidays on that. Like, I personally haven't played a game in like 3 weeks, and I know it's not just me. So people might be kind of settled in, and I know if I had more time, I've been testing them, but I don't feel like I've even got enough games. And, you know, people have been waiting a long time now for Season 4. It's been like, what, like a 2 month wait. So, you know, people don't want to get too crazy at the last minute, especially when you consider that like Criminal Syndicate hasn't even really had their fair shake yet.
Yeah. There's plenty of
Brotherhood of Mutants is second. They haven't either, right? Yep. So out of the top five, two of them are basically new. Well, no, top four. Two of them are, you know, like unknown affiliations at this point.
But then I'm surprised X-Men aren't played more. They, you know, fan favorites. They've got cool abilities and they're kind of, again.
I know why. So X-Men were played a lot. I mean, and I'm just speaking for the online community, but this was an online league, so that's probably applicable. But there's been a lot of side events within the last 2 months, and X-Men were insanely popular. I think the bottom line is people aren't winning that much with X-Men. I think they're a little bit of underdogs right now, honestly. So I other than me, I don't even know if anyone is playing X-Men that is at like a, I don't know, someone who's done well in the past. I don't know how to classify it, but you know, people have done well, gone top eights or whatever. X-Men seems to be kind of, maybe people like X-Men, but they're like, I don't feel like I can win with them. So do you disagree? I mean, if you found someone's got X-Men success, I know Pat did well once with X-Men. You know, I don't want to say that X-Men haven't won at all.
Yeah, but I see what you mean. Whenever I see X-Men across the table, I always feel like I've got a good way of beating them. So I can kind of understand what you're saying. Maybe that's just a feature of the rosters I've been playing recently. The X-Men don't have particularly strong answers to the questions that I'm asking. But
if this league started like a month or two ago, I think X-Men's numbers would be way up, but it would be purely riding the hype. And it was clear to me when I was joining these outside leagues that that's exactly what was happening. It was just like, I don't know, 60% or 40% in that ballpark X-Men. And then every league after that one, because they were very short, they were just for fun, it would be a little bit less. And this number, to me, shows me the results of all that. So it's kind of cool, honestly, because like the inflated number's not there. This is, to me, feels more accurate to like people's impression of more of how they play on the table versus just the hype that they're X-Men.
An interesting stat I always think is the single affiliation versus dual or triple affiliation. It's coming in right around 50-50. It's 48% single and then 52% non, with 5% three affiliations. And one person trying to squeeze in four affiliations, A-Force, Avengers, Wakanda, and Web Warriors. Good luck. And what's noticeable here is that it's kind of different. The Australians much more favor dual affiliation, and they've got a very different spread of, they're much hotter on Asgard and Wakanda, which maybe chimes with my thoughts about what I think is the best combination right now. And maybe they're running with that a bit more.
We should say, I know you kind of mentioned it, but we should just say you did put out a blog about everything we're talking about. And people should check that out if they want to get like all the details, because we're not going to obviously go through everything. But it's really fun to see the numbers. Even if you're not involved in the league and you just casually, it's just cool to see what other people are up to, what's popular, what's not.
Speaking of which, characters. I am not surprised to see Valkyrie as the number one character.
Was she number one for season 3?
No, at the beginning it was Venom, because Spider people all the rage, yeah. But she was in the top 16 of season 3. She was like just a hair of in front of MODOK, I think. And that
was there no roster changing in that league? Yeah, I thought there was like a mid season roster.
Yeah.
And then she went up, right? So I think she had number one half of season 3.
Maybe you're right, because then Defenders released in the middle of season 3, didn't they?
Yep, that too. Yeah. So it's funny, because if you went back like 6 months, I think Valkyrie Okoye being top 2 most popular and arguably like considered like the tier characters, I think that'd be a controversial statement. But now we talk as if like obviously Valkyrie and Okoye are top. It's so funny how things change. I remember having those battles before.
I mean, I've been riding the Valkyrie train an awfully long time.
Yeah. I think the eye-opening thing is Angela Enchantress. I know they're kind of like the new hotness, so it's like a little bit of that, but I think people have just been flat out waiting for these minis.
Yeah, so they're 3rd and 4th below Valkyrie and Okoye, 40 and 38% of people taking them. I think, definitely some people are excited to play with them, and other people have been like really workshopping lists and ideas with them, because they've had them for a while, and now they get to play those things they've been working on behind closed doors.
But it even shows, like, you know, with X-Men, the hype kind of faded a bit. But Angela Enchantress, I mean, how long have they been around? Unofficially with the early release, I think it was, when was that? Like October, was it?
Yeah.
So the fact that they've gone those months and are still this hyped, that says something extra. That's kind of what I'm getting at.
Yeah, that's true. We haven't really had an outlet to play them. I mean, they released in the UK by accident, but we've had no tournaments because of COVID. And none of the online tournaments have had them as legal. So you can play them in like pickup games and like casual.
And you can proxy them. I'm not against proxying a little bit.
And so I think this is people's first chance to sort of give them a proper run out and see what they can do.
Sure. I'm actually impressed Shuri made it to what, number 5?
Shuri's number 5.
Because, you know, Wakanda is not super on the top of that list, so I don't get where she's pl- playing.
Well, she's in, you know? She's in A-Force. She's affiliated to A-Force as well, so that helps her.
Okay.
She's fantastic in Asgard, so I think a lot of Asgardians will be taking Shuri as well. If I had an 11th slot, she'd be my 11th slot in Defenders, because Shuri jumping through a portal, that's not something you want to have to deal with on round one.
No, that's rude. Should I be playing Shuri in A-Force? I haven't tried it yet. I haven't felt the need.
She's in my 10.
Oh. I don't know. I guess I got to put that on the list of things. There's so many good characters in that damn team. Overwhelming, but I don't know.
I think we'll
it's interesting anyway.
People are seeing her maybe as a way of dealing with Criminal Syndicate. It's kind of, oh, well, they're going to count as two, but I'm going to push them off the skewer so that they count as zero, and I'm just kind of negating that leadership. Doesn't always pan out like that, but, you know, that's the theory people may be coming in with.
Okay, fair enough.
And Web Warriors as well. Web Warriors, Shuri and Web Warriors really don't hate that.
Yeah, that's not bad. Anything jump out, or we want to go to tactics cards?
Well, I just want to put in a plug for Hulk. Hulk has skyrocketed up to a heady 8% play. You know, he has... we saw, like, in Season 3, we saw Spider-Man go from nobody playing him to a decent amount of play, and he's settled back down at, like, this season, he's at 11%. So, you know, some of these models that were thought to be, you know, borderline not good enough, they are finding a spot. That every single model got taken in at least one roster. The one that it's kind of surprised me, actually, is how little Agent Widow, so Black Widow, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., got taken. Only two rosters taking that version of Black Widow. And I think that's maybe a combination of Doom Prophecy going on the Banner Restricted list, and, you know, her other version being affiliated to A-Force. Maybe they just, everyone's just like, do you know what? I'd just rather take that. I think also Mystique has a big part to do with this as well. Mystique with her deception and her sort of stealth and short-range gun. They're kind of similar characters, and I can see that people are going, well, Mystique comes with the deception. That feels really good. I'm just going to guarantee to get a victory point by making that character go over there.
Yeah, I'm with you. Mystique and Punisher over, like, Punisher and Black Agent Widow, I guess, is the thinking. I was also shocked that Agent Widow's down there. My first impulse is like, oh, maybe people have given up on this Doom Prophecy, because I'm not saying Doom Prophecy is, like, the uber super strategy or anything, but I hate the idea of playing against it, so anytime I don't have to, that's great. Just because, you know, I don't want to have that random lightning bolt just destroy me, right? Maybe because priority gets weird and then they can get me. But yeah, maybe this is just a false positive for me, because really it's just because, like you said, Mystique has taken the role. Also, if you think about it, with Mystique being a Cabal member, that lets I think Doom Prophecy and Cabal's good times, right? Because you're potentially getting two energy per shot, and then you can play the cards that give you movement abilities, like, was it Climbing Gear, things like that. Yeah. I've actually played against that, and it's pretty brutal.
Yeah, it's...
Have you played against that recently at all?
I haven't had the time to play games recently, actually.
Not as much. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so Doom Prophecy, and then you have affiliated Mystique. That's already, like, half your combo, right? And then you just add in, like, Punisher. You still could do Agent Widow, but I guess people don't agree. And then you've got a good team, right? And you can keep it small. Do maybe add, like, MODOK and keep it, like, four characters. But, yeah, Doom... So, yeah, maybe my point is that Doom Prophecy is still out there, and it's just changing its style a little bit.
You segue me very nicely there onto Team Tactics cards, because you say it's out there, but it's only taken 7%. It's the least taken of the restricted cards. Surprising, not very many people at all. Medpack is the most taken cards, but Brace for Impact has had a sort of a big resurgence, I think, with all the big throws with Magneto and She-Hulk around. I'm not surprised to see a lot more Brace. Certainly it's made its way into my roster in place of Medpack. Some of those matchups I was talking about, they tend to have a lot of throwing stuff at you.
Brace beating field dressing. Is that surprising? Or field dressing is a really good card.
I know you and I have talked about this to extent.
yeah.
But I think it's just a combination of people expecting A4s to be more popular just because of them being the newest. On top of Brotherhood, like just what Jacob said, just She-Hulk and Magneto, really big throws being added to the game, and Angela too. What a size! Yeah, so I think Brace taking a uptick again is pretty reasonable.
Yeah, so I know, and correct me if I'm wrong, I've only played a handful of games with A-Force, but my first instinct was, of course you bring field dressing with A-Force, because you might be able to like revive She-Hulk. But then I realized, oh wait, patch-up's just kind of insane with all the free power I'm getting, and I could just heal for 5. Yeah. That seems great.
And She-Hulk, field dressing She-Hulk doesn't feel like a field dressing Hulk. Because Hulk is getting those bonus 6 dice to all of those attacks that he's now going to get that he didn't get before. Mm. So it does have that same cute play that you can field dressing them. You don't remove them from the table. They do get dazed and wait for the cleanup phase to be removed. So you do get a chance to field dress them. But when you do field dress a She-Hulk, it's not that she has bad ways to spend her power. It just doesn't... She doesn't have as much impact as a suddenly revived Hulk does.
That's true. Yeah, so maybe that's it. I don't know. I don't know who's... It's interesting. The breakdown gets interesting. I don't remember. What did Morgan take? Did he take... He took field dressing in Medpack, right? Back when he played Black Order?
I think he didn't
take Brace, but that's because they had a lot of invulnerability, which negated the need of Brace. It's just an interesting little thing about who values what card the most.
Well, it's interesting. There's 15 people who didn't take 2 restricted cards. This didn't make it into the article, so this is new stuff that people haven't heard before. There's 15 people who only took 1 restricted card, and of those 15, 5 of them were Black Order players who only took Medpack as their restricted card. And I guess...
Well, there you go.
Yeah, it's similar. They want cards which are going to focus on what they want to do. They want to be taking like Execute, and they want to be taking Mothership. They want cards that advance their game plan of blowing up the world.
Right. Well, and the trick of it is, and I talked about this during the a live stream during the top 8 or whatever, but when Morgan was playing, and I was just like, I think you skip Brace because with the invulnerability, you're... The throws might still hurt you, but not as much as average character, right? So you kind of don't need the Brace, and you can kind of get cute with other stuff. So, I mean, I can't remember if Morgan was even playing field dressing. I think he might have just been playing Medpack, and then a lot of other stuff. Mm. That's interesting. I don't know any other affiliations that jump out at me that meet that. I know field dressing is... not always the coolest card ever. It is cool with all you've got, though. But not everybody's in the all you've got house. You know, there's some affiliations that just don't utilize that very well because they're not very offensive.
Yep. So our highest non-restricted card is Hired Muscle. And you may be sighing heavily when you hear that or read that. But that's where we are right now, and we'll see what effect it has on the season. I think this is one of the interesting things that we're going to see is Hired Muscle. Disarm is next down below Advanced R&D. It's only just one below it, down at the 6th most popular, but it's down 11 percentage points. I think a lot of people are seeing that as a way of dealing with these sort of big tentpole lists, this one big piece supporting the team around it. So with a She-Hulk or a Magneto or a Thanos, Time Reality Thanos, which we're going to get onto, a way of trying to mitigate that and protect their team from this one big thing that's going to do a lot of damage.
I don't think that's realistic, though, because the big things are usually going to have a priority, maybe a lower activation count than you. So that's a... Disarm is sometimes not good. If if you know you can maintain priority. I've played against people where I was doing the Corvus Proxima thing and I kept stealing priority, and my opponent's like, man, this disarm feels bad.
Yeah, that's true, but if you think about some of the lists we're talking about, maybe She-Hulk's gone and you're disarming Angela. I still think that's pretty fine. A disarmed Angela that's is a pretty sad true. Angela.
Yeah, I'll take it. I do think it disarms another card that if you do the 6 months ago talk, you know, maybe like two people were playing it out of 100. And now here it is, like one of the top, you know, unrestricted cards. Pretty cool. And disarms beating out, we'll wrap it up, but we got all you've got, Deception, Climbing Gear, and then no matter the cost. And I guess I might as well note also the Odin's Blessing, Exceptional Healing, and Rainbow Bridge, which feel almost like the same card and kind of tied together, right? but yeah, anything we want to say about those cards real quick? I think I'm surprised as a card, all you've got. I think a lot of people have, like, rumbled about, oh, all you've got should be restricted, and yet it's like being beat out by Hired Muscle, Advanced RD, and Disarm, so that's a thing. And then Deception's got a lot of, you know, talk on it as well.
The one that I've been getting more and more keen on is Climbing Gear, especially if you're running one of these tempo lists and you've got a big beater and you just want them to be in the right place. It's such a good card for that. So I suspect there's a strong correlation between Climbing Gear and those big investment models.
I find Climbing Gear with A4, since they just sort of flood on power, and then Climbing Gear with, like I was kind of saying earlier, the Cabal, what is it, Doom Prophecy thing, where you just, again, flood with power and you want to be able to move while blowing people up. It's two places I think it's like an obvious lock. I guess I should mention... Brotherhood, right? They flood on power too, so they love it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's definitely some.
I've seen it used really effectively with a big Thanos beat stick. So maybe with that, we transfer into some of the lists that we want to talk about.
Anyone have any lists they want to start us off with? Anything super crazy or any?
Well, I guess. Things that link to what we're talking about, we could talk about the resurgence of Thanos and which gems people are taking with him. Now, I think a lot of us have sort of settled in thinking, okay, we've kind of solved Thanos. He's really good with the mind gems. He can do this kind of like controlling. He can portal someone. He can deal him in. He can push him away. He's very versatile. He's like the best support character, but he does cost 6 threat. And
are we going to talk about Cookie?
Yeah, well, I think there's a number of people who've come to this. I know Matt in our Discord, TV Matt, and was been big on this for a few months.
Yeah, I think I saw him claim ownership on this. I don't know how much he was joking, but he kind of was like, hey, guys, I was there first.
I think that's probably, it may well be true, but there's an element of convergent evolution here that people have realized, you know, this is actually, this is good. And I'm sure there are people who have been working on it too and been doing really well with it. So what we're talking about here is taking Thanos with a time gem and a reality gem. So you've got a massive 9 threat investment in one model. But that model can do an awful lot. Like I said, it's got the portal, and it's kind of like you've got 4 activations because you can move. And then you can pull someone towards you, which is kind of like moving towards them again. And then you can punch them twice with some really good attacks.
Yeah, reality is fine. I mean, we love reality, but not super common on Thanos. And then you add in the time gem, which maybe it's first serious. I mean, well, maybe these people need to prove this list is good, but the rumor mill makes it sound good. Time gem taken seriously, that's incredible. And then these lists, man. I can't believe, like, when people were talking about the top list in the game right now, I know Cookie was sort of tongue-in-cheek, like,
yeah,
maybe it's Guardians of the Galaxy. And I was like, what are you talking about, man? So apparently what he meant by that is play Thanos, reality, and time gem, and then just throw in some other people that are cheap costing. Funny enough, though, I'm looking at Cookie's list here. I don't see Guardian, so he must have just decided to go unaffiliated. Is this happening? I see Okoye, Black Widow.
Now, it sounds like an A-Force roster to me, which is exactly where I think this is really interesting in A-Force.
So
you're looking
fit,
at potentially though? Something like, well, you just don't have very many figures, or you pad it out with your two threats, with your Okoyes and your Black Widows.
Nine plus six? You're starting at 14?
Yes, starting at 14. Well, really, you're starting at 16 because you've got to have at least another two to make it affiliated, which is almost certainly.
Oh, my gosh.
And then they might consider running rocket boots as well. So you can do the drop-off with Okoye dropping off.
That's fun.
She-Hulk.
Okay. Yep, he's got rocket boots. I've definitely found I like rocket boots as well, but not for this craziness.
The other cool thing that he's got in his roster is the Agents of Smash. So this is fun. Agents of Smash, those of you who maybe haven't thought about it much, is the Hulk and She-Hulk duo card, where you need to have both Hulk and She-Hulk, and then together they can throw a size 5 thing, which That's is really nuts. Cool, because normally size 5 is pretty uninteractable. And it's cool because you get to play this cool card, but it's also pretty effective and pretty dangerous. Because you've got to chew through 40, stamina worth of Hulk.
How is that affiliated? How is this happening? I guess you're just not playing. You're not playing Thanos, right?
So I watched. Yeah. You're not playing Thanos in that list. You're going a different direction, but it's like it's similar. So for on Senators today, I watched Cookie play She-Hulk, Hulk, and Okoye. And beat a very good A-Force team. So it's a serious thing. It's like, don't discount it. If you see it, don't think this is just a joke. It has got some serious.
I believe it. A player like Cookie, who we've had on the podcast, bringing some, you know, interesting tactics to us. This is just like, and the fact that he's decided to forego the list he's played like 20 to 40 times to play this, that gives me, you know, it forces me to take another look, right? So I think we'll watch his progress with great interest. And there's a bunch of other players also playing it. So those guys, they believe too, right?
Yeah, I think there's two other identical rosters and a couple that have got like some variants on it. So there's about five of them who've all got the basically the same idea. I suspect there was some testing that's gone on there. And if you see one of these people, I suspect they know what they're
Be
doing.
Be afraid. Don't start laughing when you see two Hulks. Get nervous and start looking at the board. There has been some boards where there's just this giant size 5 right in the middle of the board, like massive. Good luck on that map.
Yeah.
There's a meteor about to hit you in the head.
Yeah. Did you bring Brace? I hope so.
Yeah, you're going to just take Brace and put it on the building? I'll leave this here. You know, what's funny too is whenever someone does bring Brace and their character has no power, that's always awkward. Can you imagine someone's like, you know, fiddling with their Agents of Smash when you're on zero power? Ugh. Good luck.
I think there's, I'm really keen to see how that roster does. He's a good player and he's spent a lot of time building some really good rosters recently. I don't know how much of this is just him and how much it's the collaborative effort between him and some other people, but I can't wait to see someone else play it because I really don't want to play against it.
You want to discuss Pat since he's in the same region, just kind of go along that way?
Sure, tell us about Pat.
I mean, Pat's the kind of guy, he's not going to blow your mind with like a 9-threat Thanos or something. He's pretty Mr. Consistent, but he clearly likes to try new stuff. Let's see if I can even wrap my head around this. I'll just blurt out the characters he's playing. He's got Angela, Black Panther, Enchantress, Ghost Spider, Okoye, She-Hulk, Shuri, Storm, Toad, and Valkyrie. So after reading it, I realized what this is probably like a super wide Wakanda, adding Storm to kind of shrink down the wideness of it. And then you've got obviously She-Hulk, and a lot of cool characters that also happen to be A-Force. I kind of looked at this earlier and note mentioned to you, but the only character that's carrying She-Hulk is Angela. And, you know, we did the podcast about like hot takes or sort of like quickly assessing what your opponent's doing. That would be something that would catch my eye. And I also don't see the rocket boots. So.
No, there's no rocket boots, but I think that Angela is probably the best character to be. Special delivery.
I agree, but that's still 11 threat, right? Like, just here you go, 11 threat. So,
sure, but then, yeah.
Okay, but like, so we can keep. Let's break this down slightly. So you're bringing Wakanda, which clearly has like, I mean, he's got all the good stuff for Wakanda. He's got Ghost Spider and Valkyrie, and then even Storm to go like super wide. So I don't even have an opinion. I'm asking you guys, what if you were gonna go high or low, which one would be the high or low? Like, would it be A-Force going high or the, you know, doing the traditional Wakanda wave low? Like for threat value.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at his secures in particular, he's got Demons, Gamma, and Maya Fisk. So Gamma, we know with Wakanda, that can work really well. But then the A-Force, I think it's a really good crisis for them as well. So I think almost that's his, that might well be his favorite secure crisis. Demons, you've got a whole load of central people, and that's exactly what you want for She-Hulk and Angela to be in the same place. You know, dropping off to get a whole lot of attacks in. I can see that working really well. Maya Fisk feels like, to me, it feels like a meta counter pick. So against like a hired muscle play, then I'll fine. I've got my Maya Fisk. If they're picking hired muscle, then I'll have Maya Fisk for that. I don't think it's one he's maybe going to be forcing. Maybe I'm wrong in that, but that's kind of my take on, particularly on secures and how that shapes into his strategy.
I mean, it's interesting. He's actually playing the exact same extracts I am with he's playing Hammers, Herb, and Spider Infected. He's also notably playing Hired Muscle as well as me. So that's interesting.
It doesn't feel geared to take huge advantage. I think that's more of a, I feel like I've got to take it because I'm worried that otherwise my opponent's Hired Muscle play is going to be too strong.
I completely agree. His list is not screaming like I'm abusing Hired Muscle. He's probably just playing it because to kind of keep up a little bit, which is interesting. And then Worthy is not really like a super Wakanda option, like choice generally. So I kind of feel like he's leaning towards using the Hammer's objective for A-Force. So it might make you think.
There's a really nice thing you can do with Hammers on A-Force. Maybe we'll get into that.
Okay. Episode. Teaser. Another teaser from Jacob. All right. So to wrap it up, I just want to mention the second and first place of season 3. So you've got Morgan Reed, who came in second, and he's not going to play his Black Order this season. He wants to try out Magneto and the Brotherhood with Kingpin and with his criminal syndicate. So I've talked to him off and on about this. He just feels like, first of all, he just has a... Apparently evil speaks to him because he wants to play the Brotherhood just like he played Black Order and really try them out. He's playing really tight. So he's got Magneto, Mystique, Toad. That's it. He has decided he doesn't want to play... what's his name? Sabretooth. And then he's got... Kingpin, Taskmaster. Oh man, and MODOK. Oh, interesting. So he's just gone for like a super tight 3-3 there. And then he's going to wrap it up with Enchantress, Ghost Spider, Valkyrie, and Okoye, which are some very interesting choices. I kind of see the method to the madness there. Those characters can do well with power. All very, very powerful characters. It sounds like a really solid list, and I'm sure he has ideas of when he's going to play each of them. So we definitely want to keep an eye on him. Maybe he'll have some games on stream. That's pretty much it. Nothing else really shocking there. How about you, Jacob?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that he hasn't gone kind of the traditional criminal syndicate route of, you know, taking wider characters and trying to go, well, I'm going to have loads of characters who count double and I'm going to go for sort of the fast, secure point scoring game. I'm going to pick up a couple of extracts and score like three or four on secures in addition and try and win round three. It looks like he's going for, I'm going to punch you in the face with Kingpin, MODOK, and Taskmaster. That looks like, I mean, MODOK's not a bad control piece, to be fair. But I think it looks like... The thing in his roster that jumps out to me, I think, is the Enchantress. I think that he's going to be seeing... A lot of rosters are going to be featuring Enchantress. And if you look at the base of the Brotherhood and the Criminal Syndicate, they've got different cost bases. And I think he might be thinking, well, which threat can I fit Enchantress in best in?
He's not even bringing any cards, which I think...
Maybe I agree.
I'm not saying it's wrong, but... I'm trying to think of the name. Was it All According to Plan isn't in there?
So the other person we wanted to touch on was the winner of last season, Esmond. He's still rocking Wakanda, but this time he's cutting it with Cabal, which I think is kind of a really interesting take. So he's got kind of the standard Wakanda package that you'd expect to see. He's got Spider-Man Miles Morales for his Wakanda Wave variant, which is what he played in the final. I think maybe if it were me, I'd have gone with Gwen, just for someone who's able to move She-Hulk. She-Hulk is a real problem for them because Shuri and Panther's attacks aren't going to move her. Valkyrie can't throw her. So your only way of controlling her is with Gwen's web line. But then maybe that's what Cabal's in there for. So if he's seeing A-Force against him or someone who's rocking She-Hulk, maybe he's thinking, okay, do you know what? That's fine. I'm just going to kill She-Hulk with Cabal. And MODOK's going to blow her up. Or I'm going to take Valkyrie and Cabal and go that way, and she's going to generate a bunch of power and then has got great ways of using it. So I like this. I think it's kind of the next evolution from him. And I think what it sacrifices a little bit in the flexibility of the single affiliation, it's gaining because... You've got just a completely different playstyle. If you need to go beat down and against thumb list, that's going to be really effective. He's got some good tools that he can use. And Sploosh, you know all about how good Cabal is. So the last one that I want to touch on is a roster that I've played a couple of games with and is great fun. And that is the Spider-Foes Thanos roster. So if any of you haven't heard about this, go and check out Lexa White talking about it on, I think they went on House Party Protocol, to talk about this idea that you can use cool characters like Doc Ock and Venom, who've got good ways of making benefits out of extra dice. So Venom can benefit from Death's Decree, Thanos' two extra dice on an attack, when he's doing his so many snacks attacks. And Doc Ock, those extra dice are more valuable for him because he counts wilds double. So the more dice you give him, the more times he counts wilds double. And he's going to... Yeah, I've had an attack of just a straight strike, which did 9 damage on a 3-threat character, getting 9 hits on a roll. It was a good roll, but it was just... An enormous amount of damage that he was able to do. His spike potential goes through the roof. And then adding in Green Goblin, so you've got access to well-laid plans. It's a really fun roster. If you haven't already seen that, try it out. It just made me go stop when I first came across it and go, huh, it's really well thought out. And they've spent a lot of time honing it and refining it. And I hope it does really well.
I have messages from like mid-December about that list. I was like, ooh, I need to know more about this. Can you give me the whole list? And yeah, it's on my bucket list of fun things to do.
I think it's a great option if you're not sure. If you've got a draft coming up, it's a great draft strategy because it's got a lot of characters who probably don't go for very much. And if you can secure Thanos, yeah. I think it's a really good list to run.
Well, that wraps it up for this episode of The Danger Room. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something to level up your next game. You can reach out to us on our Discord, Twitter, or Facebook. The links will be in the description. We have a questions channel on our Discord, so feel free to drop us some questions in there and we'll answer them on the show. Thank you for taking the time and listening to us. If you're liking what you hear, leave a rating or comment, or even both. We appreciate any feedback to help us grow and become a better group to bring you the best quality content that we can. See you next time in the Danger Room.